namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So it's a special, rare privilege to be speaking in the courtyard of Krishna Balaram. It's a very humbling and daunting experience. So I appreciate you bearing with me. My voice comes and goes, so I'm going to get a little bit of help. We're now reading from the sixth canto, and Mother Parvati curses Chitraketu. It wasn't one of her better days, but it turns out he made it one of his better days. And so we'll be getting into that a little bit. I'm going to ask for some help with the verse. Is there a voice, Punch? Punch, you want to do word for word? Yeah. Or I can do if you want. Yeah, sure, go on. Preserve voice. I can do it from here. Narayana para. Pure devotees who are interested only in the service of Narayan. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sarve. All. Na. Not. Kutaschana. Anywhere. Bibhyati. Are afraid. Svarga. In the higher planetary systems. Aparvarga. In liberation. Narakeshu. And in hell. Api. Even. Tulya. Equal, Arta, value, Darshana, who see. Translation. Yeah, go. Thank you. Are you gonna? Yep, please.
Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. The Prabhupada's report. Parvati might naturally have inquired how devotees become so exalted. Therefore, this verse explains that they are Dhanayana Para, simply dependent on Narayana. They do not mind reverses in life, because in the service of Narayan, they have learned to become, to tolerate whatever hardships there may be. They do not care whether they are in heaven or in hell. They simply engage in the service of the Lord. This is their excellence. Anupuyena Krishnanushilanam. They are liberally engaged in the service of the Lord, and therefore they are excellent. By using the word vritya vrityanam, Lord Shiva pointed out that although Chitraketu provided one example of tolerance and excellence, all the devotees who have taken shelter of the Lord as eternal servants are glorious. They have no eagerness to be happy by being placed in the heavenly planets, becoming liberated, or becoming one with Brahman, the supreme effulgence. These benefits do not appeal to their minds. They are simply interested in giving direct service to the Lord.
Okay. I'll repeat the verse. Devotees solely engage in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. Never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. Om Jnana 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 Jnana. So, Parvati, she was a little insulted. There she is, sitting on the lap of Lord Shiva in front of great saints. I think Narada was there, the Kumaras, all these great saints. Everyone's there. And she's just sitting on her husband's lap, kind of, I assume, kind of snugly about it. And Chitraketu sees it, and he's so amazed. Because here, Lord Shiva, he wasn't thinking Lord Shiva was shameless, as Parvati was accusing him of doing. Rather, he was thinking Lord Shiva's amazing. That find anybody, he just understands his position and he's not bothered by it. He's what we would call extremely self-assured in his own devotional service. So he wasn't bothered by criticism. Now Parvati, she was a little more sensitive about these things, and she took it as a personal insult, and she insulted Chitraketu. Now Chitraketu himself really didn't find a fault with himself, nor, curiously enough, did he find a fault with Parvati. He didn't. He just accepted it as fate would be. He did apologize. He referred to her as mother and apologized to her. Didn't want to offend her. But not that he particularly found a fault. So, devotees engage in service, really well situated in their position, become fearless. Now, Prabhupada is Abhay Charan. He's fearless. Now, the rest of us here, are we entirely fearless? But before I go there, I just like to know who I'm speaking to a little bit. So just to get an idea. First, is there anybody here for the first time? Okay. Is there anybody here for the last time? Okay. So we got a sandwich. We got that covered. And who here is not from India? Okay. I assume the rest are from India or don't know where they're from. To be clear, am I speaking slow enough for those who English is not their first language? If I need to slow down or something, let me know. You can hear okay? Okay. I want to make sure everyone can hear. Oh my gosh, there is Malati. Ooh-hoo. Hare Krishna. Oh. When I first met Prabhupada, a wonderful Malati, and I can only say Malati with a preface. Wonderful Malati was Prabhupada's cooking for Prabhupada. And she was there with her daughter Saraswati. So she would cook and bring in the sweets, and Prabhupada would give away the sweets. And Malati had such a nice smile on her face and such an enthusiasm that it went to my heart and made me think, wow, if people have this kind of devotion to Prabhupada, maybe someday down the road there's some hope for me. So it's a big special thing to see Malati. And then the attitude of Parvati was, unfortunately, she was somewhat of a fault finder. There's a saying, if you want to criticize someone, you should walk a mile in their shoes. Do you know why? Because this way you have their shoes and you're a mile away. With thanks to my scriptwriter. So, Parvati was, she didn't have that quite open-hearted attitude. And later, Lord Shiva sang this verse, by the way, if anyone's not clear, this verse is spoken by Lord Shiva himself. He is explaining the glories of devotees. You know, the previous verse, my dear, he begins it such an interesting way. My dear, beautiful Parvati. It's sort of a little sarcastic. You're very beautiful, but that's not all that counts. You've missed the point. You're very beautiful. So sometimes we will compliment someone in some way to try to take them someplace else. So sometimes we can't say things directly. Like Narada Muni said to King Prachinibharishat, he begins, Raja, O Raja, O King, once there was a king. Of course, he's talking about Prachinibharishat, but then he talks about all the nine, the house with nine gates and all this, because the king couldn't quite hear it. So in a similar diplomatic way, and any of us who are married, we all know we better be diplomatic with our spouses. We all know that. So in a diplomatic way, oh, beautiful Parvati, very clever. There's a lot of subtle humor. I was having a discussion about this with Haridayananda Maharaj. A lot of subtle humor in the Bhagavatam. And he says, mostly we miss it. But if you know the Sanskrit, you'll see these sages were doing a lot of little joking and a lot of puns. But they don't translate well. So you have to know Sanskrit to see it. But plays on words and puns. And I mean, these were kind of happy people. They weren't just, they were joyous. And why were they joyous? Because they're connected with Krishna. They're engaged in devotional service. And the point being made herein is when one's in devotional service, they don't have any fears. They're happy. They're peaceful. Now, is everyone here always happy and peaceful? Okay, is anybody here would like to go tell me how they're not happy and peaceful? So, what's going on? Well, I counted in the Veda base 150 times, and then I stopped counting. So when Prabhupada says something 150 times or more, maybe it's considered very significant. And he said, over 150 times that Krishna consciousness is a, any guesses? Guess? Gradual process. So therefore, it's not all going to happen today or tomorrow. It takes a little bit of time. And when I first came to Vrindavan, I came here in October 1977. Were you here then, Malati? For the science conference? No? Okay. We had the scientists from the Bhaktivedanta Institute. I'm one of them. I'm the down-to-earth scientist from the Bhaktivedanta Institute, the down-to-earth guy. I'm the geologist. So we came here and we had the first international conference on Life Comes From Life. Has anybody read about that? Who's familiar with the first international conference on Life Comes From Life? Who's familiar? Who's not familiar? Okay, and who doesn't know if they're familiar, so everybody gets to participate? So we have those who are, those who aren't, those who don't know if they are or aren't. Okay, we'd like everyone to be part of the class. So Prabhupada wanted us to come to Vrindavan and have a science conference. So Swarup Damodar Maharaj was our fearless leader, and I mean that by absolutely fearless. And Sariputta, the late Sariputta, one of my best friends, who I miss the most, was here, and myself, and Gyanadas, and Madhava, and a few others. And Prabhupada wanted us to give papers on Life Comes From Life. The whole thrust of the Bhaktivedanta Institute is this one point, that life doesn't come from matter. Prabhupada did not reject science at all. And he made that very clear to us. He didn't reject science. It was something he says in the Bhagavatam, even mentions geology, I'm glad to say, can be used in the service of Krishna. What Prabhupada was rejecting is a reductionism, that life simply comes from matter. So we all gathered at the Vrindavan temple, and in the courtyard of the Gurukula, we would give our papers. And then we had some pretty big prominent scientists come who would give their papers. And then we would discuss back and forth. And Prabhupada, a month before he left us, he was quite ill at that time. So we would walk into his room every night. He would call us in. Tamal Krishna Maharaj would call us into his room. And Prabhupada wanted our Sankirtan report. What were our Sankirtan was, what were their arguments? What were our arguments? And he wanted to know what was said back and forth. One time we walked into the room, and Prabhupada at that time was so weak that his eyesight had virtually failed. And so when we walked into the room, Tamal Krishna Maharaj is describing us to Prabhupada. Said, Prabhupada, your disciples are walking in. And, you know, here's Swarup Damodar, here's so-and-so. And they're all wearing suits and ties, because we had suits and ties on for the conference. And Prabhupada said, get them chairs. Of course, in those days, chairs weren't quite much of an accommodation that was available. We were floor people. And so somehow a few chairs, two of us sat on one chair, somehow three of us on another chair. Then the other two of us squatted halfway down, pretending we're on a chair because Prabhupada couldn't see that well and we wanted to follow his order and didn't know what to do. And then we were able to give Prabhupada our Sankirtan report. He was very, very pleased about it. Now, when I first got to Vrindavan, I had the good luck of being on the same plane with Atreya Rishi Prabhu. Our plane had stopped in Iran, and he was heading up this preaching in Iran. This was before the Ayatollah took over. And so he was a GBC man. And he was also my dear, dear friend. So I just kind of followed him into Prabhupada's room. And then when we looked at Prabhupada, he was so thin. He had probably not eaten anything substantial in months. I think it was more or less diabetic kidney failure, if anybody's familiar. But then you can't eat. There's no digestion at all. And he's so thin. And we looked at him. And there was a shocked look on our face, because the Prabhupada we know is the one sitting on the Vyasasan, you know, vibrant. And even if he's sick, then he's better. And he looked so sick. And then when he saw the look on our face, he could see that. And Prabhupada started laughing and laughing. Anybody know this story? You know, it must be recorded somewhere. He started laughing and laughing. Well, we're wondering, what's so funny? And he turns to Atreya and says, I've been trying to tell you I'm not this body. Now the body is gone. I'm living in my bones. Can you believe me? I'm not this body. So he was using our kind of, I'd say the word I would say is a shock at seeing Prabhupada in such a practically emaciated condition, not having eaten for so long, and seeing him that way. And then he made it a point to make it like a preaching point to us. So I'm visiting Vrindavan, and that was my first visit to Vrindavan. And then I went off for a walk. I wanted to be in a meditative state and try to enter Vrindavan, because I felt then, as I feel now, I don't have the qualification to be here. And I walked to the MVT. The MVT. Now, of course, there was no MVT then. And there was nothing. What was the MVT then? Beautiful, soft Raman Reti sand. I went for a walk the other day, just some distance, and I walked down the road, and there was beautiful, soft Raman Reti sand. It brought me back. And when I went right behind the temple, there was just soft sand and peacocks. And if I would close my eyes and just try to embrace the mantra, somehow I could somehow hear Krishna and Balaram playing. It was like that. Now you have to go so far to get to a place and find a little bit of soft sand. So we have bottled water now, but not so much soft sand. We'll have to decide later if this is one step forward and two backwards or not, but I'll leave that for others to decide. So that was the Vrindavan of those days. And then we had our science conference. And we had one event that only could happen in India, no place else. It shows kind of the piety of the country. Even Prabhupada found this event somewhat amazing. We're having the science conference. And this one famous scientist is giving his lecture on liquid crystals. If anybody doesn't know what liquid crystals are, sometimes you get these toys and you touch it and it turns all kinds of colors. It's just a crystal. So he thought liquid crystals would give, for various reasons, the secret of life, and he will win the Nobel Prize for discovering how life can come from matter. And we invited him on purpose, by the way. We wanted a foil, somebody had it, and he presented it. And when he was done, there were so many questions, some from our side, some from other scientists, and appreciation. And one lady kept raising her hand, and he wouldn't call on her. This can only happen in India, by the way. He wouldn't call on her. So finally, he has to call on her, because she's raising her hand. She's very persistent. So he calls on her, and she stands up and says, "I am his wife. And I want you to know that despite all his atheistic talk, he still goes to the temple and prays." So that kind of piety, that kind of where Krishna is everywhere, you wouldn't find that in a Western conference. That's a special, unique gift from India. And being in Vrindavan is that place where I pray and I ask all of your many, many blessings, that I too can somehow have that same faith, that understanding, because everything here is a little amplified. Everything is like Vrindavan has an amplifier. Our anartas get amplified, our devotion gets amplified. So it's a very special place. And I really have only been here, this is only my third real visit here since 77. Then one time I had another good experience, and now I'm here again. And I wanted to touch upon another topic that I think is relevant for this verse and relevant for our discussion. And that is another fearless devotee, one of the most fearless devotees I ever met. So I would like to speak about this fearless devotee a moment, because I think being in Vrindavan, I am personally going to her samadhi, Yamuna Devi's, every day. and getting great inspiration. So Yamuna is the one that made me a devotee. As Panchagoda described, I met Prabhupada in 1972. I was the only guest at the first Mayapur festival who spoke English. The others were Bengali villagers. So there was one guest and 70 devotees. Can you imagine what that's like for the one guest? And every one of them was young, enthusiastic, and in an extreme preaching mood. And there was one person to preach to. The only modern machine they had there was the machine that gave the tickets to who's in line to get him next. Mayapur then had no facility. As we had, there was, I think, one merchant selling coconuts, Dobbs, nothing else. There was no buildings. There was a Bhajan Kutir. Achyutananda had built the Bhajan Kutir for Prabhupada, which is still there. A men's tent, a women's tent, a pandal tent, and rice paddies surrounding us. That was Mayapur then. I had heard there was a food relief program going on for Bangladesh refugees, and I had already I'd been chanting Hare Krishna for many years. Just because I saw a Harinam party. Turns out Burja was telling me he was probably on it in 68 in New York. But I really wanted to know, figured the only way I would ever know who the players, who was real and who wasn't, was to come to India. Because at that time in America, a lot of gurus were coming. One New York paper in its centerfold, every week would have a picture of the latest guru off the boat because they were making a joke out of it. This niche and that niche and this Baba and that Baba, Baba Baba here and a Baba Baba there and a Baba Baba everywhere. So it was kind of, it was like a menagerie scene. And in order for me to discern it, I figured the only way I'm going to figure this out is go to India. So I didn't want to go as a tourist, so I became a high school teacher in the most modern, progressive, least political modern state in India. I became a high school teacher in Bihar. I once told that joke and it was one Bihari in the audience. Oh my God. Okay. So I went there and being fully capable of being very mental, I would ask a lot of questions and try to inquire, but I didn't quite have the right process. And then when I went up to Mayapur, Tejas met me as I got off the boat crossing the river, and he had also been in the Peace Corps, and we met, and he introduced himself, and he said, "Why don't you come meet Prabhupada?" So I got to go in and meet Prabhupada. And then somehow or other, Prabhupada, one of two things, either he found the conversation interesting, or more likely, he realized that me and 70 devotees wouldn't work very well. He better keep me with him all day to protect, better keep me with him to protect me. And I think that's more or less what happened. So I'm having a conversation with Prabhupada, and we're discussing and talking, you know, different topics. And Prabhupada, for those who hadn't really had the interaction with Prabhupada, people ask, what was it like? Well, Prabhupada's such a nice person. I think just had such a nice demeanor about him. So unassuming, so disarming, always the twinkle in his eye. Many things Prabhupada says, devotees always say, "Prabhupada said," because Prabhupada said, when people say Prabhupada said, don't think I said it. But what people don't realize, Prabhupada was also just like Lord Shiva here, goes beautiful Parvati, a little sarcasm, a little diplomacy. Prabhupada did that. He was joking a lot, but we are such a generational cultural difference. Many times, whoop, right over our heads, just over our heads. Looking back, I can see it. And sitting with Prabhupada, of course, I had the body language too. I can, you know, many times joking, and even when it got to the most difficult part where I discussed it, well, I'm not sure I can do all these regulative principles. The way he responded to it, so disarming, I could actually open up my heart. But I wasn't quite opening all the way. I was holding back, trying to be intellectual and mental. Just, indeed, listening. I mean, respectfully so. Krishna says in the Gita, one should approach a spiritual master and do what next? Inquire. And do what? So I did that accidentally. I was doing the food relief. I knew I wasn't going to challenge Prabhupada. Too much respect. So I accidentally, very accidentally, I hit the right formula. So then I'm speaking to Prabhupada, but it's not the heart yet. So then Yamuna Devi comes up to me. It's Gaur Purnima night. Now, there are no lights other than a generator running a little pandal lights. It's virtually completely dark, but full moon. And in her eyes, there were tears. Just tears in her eyes. Her eyes weren't just wet, they were tearing. She looks up to me. And she says, "You are so fortunate. You are so fortunate. Prabhupada is spending all day, every day with you, talking to you. You don't know your good fortune. You don't understand it." She basically love bombed me. Just dropped a big love bomb right on my head. So what did I do? Oh my God. You know, and it was so strong. It yanked me out of my head. And it kind of opened up my heart. And I got terrified. And I walked behind the pandal and just collapsed and did something grown men like myself don't do. Just started crying like a baby to myself. Oh no, what am I going to do? And so, the next day I walk in to see Prabhupada. He calls me. I don't walk in. He calls me to see him. But he would call me several times a day. He was protecting me and having fun. So I say, "Thank you so much. Tomorrow I have to leave." And Prabhupada says, "Don't talk." And he spells L-E-A-V-E. Talk L-I-V-E. "I cannot yet. I was thinking of returning to my town." But Prabhupada goes, kind of in a grave voice, "Don't return." "Ooh, I should stay here?" Prabhupada goes again in a grave voice, "Stay here. If you tell me to, I'll stay." And then Prabhupada said the most amazing words to me. "Yes, you're a very good boy." And you know how you have a dog and you go, "Good boy, good boy." So at that point, I understood I was his dog. I kind of understood it. At that point, the discussion changed. It was, how can I be a little more serious about Krishna consciousness? So all of this credit goes to wonderful, wonderful Yamuna. And I had the good fortune of a few times being able to thank Yamuna and share that with her. And just read her biography with, along with Mukunda Goswami's book, are the very, very best books for me of that genre. So, being here in Vrindavan, being a few minute walk from Yamuna Samadhi is very special. It's very nice. Yamuna can, every day she greets us. I'll tell you a funny story. One time, Yamuna was in Mayapur. In around 96, I believe it was. And there was discussion. I don't want to raise too much controversy, but controversy will go on forever, but controversy about the position of women, etc. And so, GBC decided she should lead a kirtan. So she led a kirtan. And then she left Vrindavan right after. She had to take her train. And then there was a firestorm came up. And I, Hari Kesh, the former Swami, is my good friend and neighbor. We meet all the time. So he was GBC then. So I asked him what happened. He said, yes, there was a firestorm came. But he said, I said to devotees who are firestorming, I said, you hear her sing every day. Every day she's singing to you. So one more time she sang. What's your problem? And Yamuna also told me that story. She said, what's the problem? I'm singing here every day. And this is another day she was singing, because every day we greet the deities and Yamuna sings so beautifully. So these are a few stories of Yamuna. I wanted to mention the BI conference, and then I wanted to tie it in a little bit more to this verse. While walking in Vrindavan, I notice a lot of trees. And a lot of trees are being planted in Vrindavan by the municipality. That's a good thing. Now, do you notice what's around the tree? A wire mesh. Why is a wire mesh there? Because without that wire mesh, what will happen? The dogs, the monkeys, the people, the rickshaws will kill the tree. Now, if as that tree grows up, if we keep a wire mesh around that tree, what will happen to that tree? The wire mesh itself will kill the tree. That same wire mesh, if kept around it as the tree gets bigger, will choke the tree and prevent it from growing. So similarly, Prabhupada has given us a wire mesh. He gave us a very great protection. And we have to, and that wire mesh keeps us from fear. And as we grow in our devotional service, we have to be careful to respect the wire mesh. At the same time, let go of the wire mesh when it's necessary and be like King Chitraketu, who had no fear whatsoever. If he was cursed, if he was blessed, he had his great strength within Krishna. So we have to expand beyond our cocoon and be able to be fearless in our own selves, in our own certainty of our devotional position. Sometimes people say to me, your generation was so fortunate, you were here with Prabhupada. To paraphrase Charles Dickens, in A Tale of Two Cities, it was the best of times and the worst of times. The best of times with Prabhupada, young, enthusiastic. The worst of times, there was no one in the movement over 30 years old. No one over 30. I mean, no one. I remember when Rupanuga turned 31, he was the oldest, I said, my God, is he an old man now? There was no one over 30. So we were all, there was no one elder to talk to take advice. There was no one, somebody comes to Grahasta, there's no one to say, what are you supposed to do? There was no one to talk to about things, no one to reveal the mind to. It was, you know, there was a saying we had then, Rupa Goswami is very clear, we must reveal our mind in confidence, and we have to listen in confidence. And there was a saying then, telephone, telegraph, and tell a devotee. There was hardly any confidence. So it was the best of times being with Prabhupada and the worst of times being an immature society. Now we have a mature society, and as we have a mature society, we're going to have a lot of tensions. But we no longer are going to have that protective net wire around us. So we have to become, by our own prowess and by our sadhu sangha, our own strong devotees ourselves. And going back to what Prabhupada was saying to me, in his final instructions to me, that's what he said. He said, you just, after Mayapur, I saw Prabhupada another time. And I was very bewildered, because in Mayapur, everyone told me to do everything. Somebody would say, chanting is the most important. Reading is the most important. Offering obeisance is most important. Prasadam is the most important. Going on and on and on. And everything was the most important. I had no idea what to do. You know, oh, poor me. I was thinking. And then I went to Prabhupada. And so I asked him two questions, not recorded. You want to know what he said? I'll tell you what he said. One was, I said to Prabhupada, I can't offer my food to Krishna, because I instruct to do so. I'm not convinced Krishna's God. I'm not convinced that Krishna is God. I was honest. It's very easy to be honest with Prabhupada, because he wasn't judging me at all. Not at all. No judgment. He just saw that I had some hankering to know, so there was no judgment. That's why it was so easy to speak to him. No judging. I could reveal my mind. And I revealed my mind in the book in quite embarrassing ways. But for Prabhupada, with Prabhupada, it was easy. So I said that. So what did Prabhupada say to me? Well, what do you think? Do you think he explained to me that Krishna is God? No. What would Prabhupada have said to me? Think about it a moment. What would you say if I walked up to you and I said, Sagar Swami, I don't believe Krishna's God. I can't offer my food. What would you say? Anybody want to venture something? Yes.
Who is God?
What's
that? Who is God?
He might say that, but he didn't. Read the answer. That's good. Any other guess? Yes. Speak louder. It's not important whether I think Krishna's God. No, he didn't say that. Yes, mother. Well. I could eat, he almost, you're getting real close. He understood I believed in God. First thing is, the key words I said, I'm not convinced Krishna's God. I didn't say I wasn't convinced of God. I was. I was always, since my youngest day, I was absolutely convinced of God. Since I was a little boy, I would be talking to God. So it wasn't that there wasn't God. So he understood I accepted there was God. He understood I accepted the concept of prasadam, I couldn't offer it to Krishna. So he said, thank God before I eat. And I said to myself, he said, no, tell people what you're doing, preach. So take that little bit of realization I had that there is God and food and God have a connection. And instead of trying to correct what was wrong, he grabbed that faith I had and just amplified that faith. You believe in God, so thank him before you eat. So now before I eat, I always say, I always think of God, but now it's in the form of Krishna. But that would come with maturity. So before I eat, what do I say? Om Tat Sat, thanks a lot, Jai God. That's the old Gurukula say. So then the second thing I said to Prabhupada, okay, what do I do? And then Prabhupada gave me the most sage advice possible. The most sage advice possible. So I wanted to know, I really want to make advancement, but I knew in my heart that it was gradual. I had hadn't really been in the hippie experience where we can kind of jump into things and jump out. You know, it was kind of that genre. I wasn't coming from that place. So I had to enter things, just my own nature, just thoughtfully. So Prabhupada responded, and he said, the most important thing I can do. So now think of it. I said to you, after perfect questions, after all that, and I went up to you and said, what's the most important thing I can do? Think what you would answer. Anybody want to guess? It's Chan Hare Krishna? Yes, Prabhu. Sitting in front, Prabhu. You raise your hand? Yes. Oh, okay. See, if you scratch, you scratch something, you get called on. Okay, anybody want to take a guess? Most important thing I can do. Oh, somebody knows. Come on, somebody get embarrassed and say the wrong thing. Yes. Associate with devotees. Yes, you get a plate of maha. Panchi gets a plate of maha. Yes, said the most important thing. You got it right, perfect. Perfect answer. He said, associate with devotees and everything would come automatically. And then later on, if there was more time, I would tell more stories of what happened and how when the association worked and what didn't work and how I learned how to really associate with devotees. Because associating with devotees to me didn't mean just hang out with someone who wears a dhoti and got clay marks on their head. It became much, much more profound. And then Prabhupada told me to take advice from one devotee who actually then had what we would call a fall down. And so it gave me... those are other stories for other times. We're just about running out of time with 6 minutes left. I didn't mean to go so long, but I want to go and just read the verse one more time and then go to questions. Devotees solely engaged in devotional service, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, New Delhi, hellish planets, are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. So, are there any questions? Yes, Maharaj. I've just recently come to associate with Maharaj. We had lunch the other day. And I've come, it's like I've known him like my whole life. It's just such a sadhu. Hare Krishna.
But my question is, if you could please elaborate a little more about the wire, what's that?
The mesh.
The wire mesh. When do we get rid of the mesh? What a good question. Well, it's just like when you join military training. Who here has been in military training? It's really miserable, isn't it? Anyway, in military training, everybody does basic training, and everybody does the same thing. There's no individuality. Then, at least in the American Army, which somewhat has their act together, when you're done, then they find out what your specialty is, and they're actually good at it, and then they have you do what you do best. So similarly, in devotional service, we all begin with, we try to be surrendered. Then we have to do what we do best. We reverse things. As Bourjean once explained it to me, as managers, the manager should be saying, oh, Prabhu, what's your propensity? I want to engage it. And devotee should be thinking, I'll do anything for Krishna. Instead, we reverse it. And devotee says, oh, I want to do my propensity. And the manager says, you damn well better do anything for Krishna. So we kind of do these reversals. We reverse a lot of things. Prabhupada says, give you books and money would come. We say, okay, we'll get some money, then we'll do books. You know, so we tend to reverse things. It's just how it happens. So with the wire mesh, as we get more mature, we have to be our own self. We finish basic training and do what we do best for Krishna and find out, just like Arjuna, what's the Gita? It's a book of self-realization. In chapter 2, Deus Minyata Dehe, you're not this body, you're not this body. And Krishna just smashes Arjuna that you're not this body. Then he spends a good part of the rest of the Gita reconnecting him with his body, explaining the modes of nature, explaining your duties, explaining what you can do in this body. Then at the end, he gives him complete existential freedom. No other scripture in the world gives complete existential freedom. And at the end of the Gita, what does Krishna say? He says, okay, I've explained to you, do whatever you want to do. You know, do what you want. complete existential freedom. So we have that complete existential freedom. But first, we have to know ourselves. So we get our training to really know ourselves. You know, we shave our heads, and if we don't shave it, Krishna does it for us as we get older. And we shave our heads. And after we, you know, when we put on clothes and we change our name because, you know, we have the affectionate name our parents called us, we try to get out of the bodily concept. But then once we make a little progress, gradual process, I said, 150 times Prabhupada said, once we make that gradual process, then we have to find out, and we're a little more mature. We're not immature. Our mind is going to bounce here and there. We've had some devotion. We've had that experience of the taste of the holy name, such that we have a hankering, a lolium. I want that. I want it. I want it. When we get that point, we want it. We mature enough to know my spiritual batteries are weak. I better get to Vrindavan and Mayapur. And as Prabhupada said, do my recharge. When we have that maturity, I can reveal my mind to my friends in confidence. They can help me. Boy, I'm having trouble with this. I've lost my taste. We all have our troubles. I mean, anybody who says they don't have their troubles, they have a lot of trouble. they have more trouble than anybody else. And then we go on, and we can then find what we can do best for Krishna and do it in cooperation. Now, finally, said, my main service in ISKCON now is my work with my partner, Praja Bihari, doing conflict resolution in ISKCON. So we do, Braja Bihari and I, we do, you know, for ISKCON Resolve, major conflicts. And we are what I would call the septic tank for ISKCON. You know, anybody who has something they want to dump, lay it on me. It's like a flock of pigeons flies over every day and does their droppings. But it's a service, and we treat it as a service. And with that, but we talk to each other a lot, and we reveal our minds so, you know, we can stay clean doing it. And so in that, I see the struggle over and over again. A devotee is having this wire mesh struggle of trying to be who they can be. And some devotees, sometimes they cry, I just got to be me. They actually cry like that. I just, you know, and they feel, well, that's just all false ego. It's all false ego. It's not false ego. It wasn't, Arjuna wasn't false ego when he became the kshatriya he was supposed to be in the mood of service to Krishna. There is a way to be ourselves in relation to Krishna. And that is what means to get rid of the wire mesh. But I hope that helps. Thank you very much. Panch, are we out of time now? Panch, go to Prabhu. Okay, I'll go till you tell me to stop. Are there any other questions? Maybe none others. Then it's, everyone's hungry. That's a good sign. That's a good sign. If everyone is hungry and stayed awake, it's a perfect Bhagavatam class. They go so deep asleep they're not hungry, then it's really bad. Okay, go on. Yes, lady. The lady in the front, please. Yes. Yeah, I guess speak into the microphone, because I think this is being broadcast. If I'd known that, I couldn't have spoken. Oh, to really associate with devotees. Ah, my realization on really associating. Well, first, I'm particular who I associate with. I mean, I'll offer respect to anyone, sometimes at a little bit of a distance, sometimes at even a greater distance. I'll try to offer respect. Being in Vrindavan is very good, because as the merchant's cheating me, I'm offering him respect, so it's a good practice for me. Yeah, I make no profit from you. Right. So so one thing is to be particular who I reveal my mind to. It all comes down to one book, Upadeshamrita. And Upadeshamrita what are we going to do? We're going to give and receive prasadam. We're going to give and receive gifts. We're going to reveal our mind and listen. St. Francis put it very well. If you want to be understood, what do? Understand. So God gave us two ears and one mouth. So the secret is to learn to listen in that ratio. So if we want to really associate, we need to learn not just to speak. Of course, I've been doing that for an hour. Sorry about that. But anyway, you know, we all have our hypocrisy. But we need to learn how to really listen deeply. And then when we listen to the people we trust, they will understand us. And then we have really, really deep association. This week, I'm really blessed. My old friend, Burijan, he understood that, I'm not saying it humbly, this is the truth, that I didn't understand how to enter Vrindavan. I've listened to some of his seminars, and he and Satchinanda Swami, I really didn't know how. And I wrote Burijan ahead of time, I'm a little, don't know what to do. I don't want to just be a tourist, but I will be. And then my friend Ritavaja Swami wrote Burijan ahead of time saying, give BT some mercy. So then Burijan, every day I come here, first thing is, he has me sit in his easy chair and talks to me. Arranges two massages to get rid of my jet lag vata. Then has me for lunch every day and just lets me reveal my mind and slowly enter the here. This is the kind, so I sought out his association. Then he gives me, you know, I just listen to him, and then he understands me. So just listen nicely, and people will understand you, and then you get deeper and deeper association, and the deeper association turns into loving association. When you read the CC, CC is like the coolest book on the planet. Well, there's a lot of other cool books, following the CC, but the CC is like the coolest book. Why? Because it's modern. It took place in historical times. I mean, you know, you go to Vrindavan, was this the tree where Krishna hung the gopis' clothes, or was that the tree? You know, different people say different things, and I don't know these things, you know. Did Lord Chaitanya really sit here? That part's absolutely sure. He's actually in historical times. Because we have revelations, Goswamis, and they tell us things so we can get to know things. But Lord Chaitanya was really here, and he's like super modern. I mean, he was here the same time Columbus was looking for the Indians. He just found the wrong Indians. I tell one funny story. Did you know that Lord Chaitanya never ate a chili pepper? Who knows that? Who knows that Lord Chaitanya never ate a chili pepper? Does anybody know why Lord Chaitanya never ate a chili pepper? Why? The Portuguese brought him here. They weren't here. You look at the recipes at the Jagannath Temple. They're millenniums old. There's no tomatoes either. Not that there's something wrong with chili, not something wrong with it. But I'm just trying to give the time frame. The Lord Chaitanya came, historical time, same time Columbus was trying to somehow or other get to India because there was so much wealth here then. And you look at the loving relationships, devotees, how they talk to each other, how they serve each other, and especially impresses me is the extreme affection they have for each other. And I look, when I was with Yamuna, the extreme affection she would have with devotees. And Yamuna, she was offered by George Harrison, I will make you into a rock star. And she said, no, because it will take me away from my relations with the devotees. Take her away from Krishna. She understood it. So the secret is to have that deep, loving relationship. Now, sometimes we're in a very lonely position. I won't even ask this question. But if I asked, and everyone is very honest, I think we'd be a little shocked. I'll tell you the question. How many of you are lonely more than you feel you ought to be? How many of you, just look in your heart for a moment, don't answer, feel sometimes just this loneliness. So as devotees, We're the greatest personalists, hypothetically, theoretically, scripturally. But we can be nirvishesha shunyavadi. We can be so drowned out by impersonalism. So even if we're alone, as Prabhupada said, he was never alone. He always had Bhakti Siddhanta with him. So if we're in a lonely position, sometimes Krishna's forcing us to develop that direct relationship with Krishna. And it can be that way. But that said, there shouldn't be too many lonely devotees. We should be associating with each other. And if we are in that lonely position, it may be a special blessing. Just like Chitraketu, he took it as a blessing that he was cursed. But that so many devotees, and remember, I'm the porta potty of ISKCON, I hear it all. A porta potty means a portable toilet they take to places. They call it in America porta potty. So, and the loneliness of devotees is the saddest thing I hear, the very saddest thing. So we need each other's association, and we need to learn how to associate deeper. And again, Upadeshamrita. Does that answer your question? Okay. Pancha, that's time now? Time. Okay. I'm delighted. I asked to be speaking here under this tree in this place. I ask all your blessings that I can also enter Vrindavan, as many of you have successfully done. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.